Welcome to the Comms Chat. I, Krista Osborne, will be your host today. In this episode, we are joined by Rob Turner, a digital strategist and executive education facilitator specialising in digital transformation. Rob is the CEO of Burn the Sky, a platform offering digital transformation training to a network of digital experts, learning design and delivery specialists, partners and alumni from around the world. He runs digital training courses for clients like Google, American Express and HSBC. Along with his training business, Rob has also written three best practice books, which you can find linked in the description of this podcast. So welcome, Rob, and thank you so much for joining me on today's podcast. You're actually my first guest on the Comms Chat. This is my debut as well, so thank you so much for joining me. Really looking forward to chatting to you.
Thanks, Krista, for inviting me on the programme today.
You're so welcome. Okay, let's jump right in. My first question today, if you could just give us a bit of an overview of who you are and your communications expertise, a bit about your career journey as well and sort of how you've got to where you are today as CEO of Burn the Sky.
Yeah, thanks. So my journey started out, because it seems like a long time ago now, as a journalist. I always believed in the written word. I bought newspapers because of, you know, what I wanted to read rather than be advertised to. So I started out as a journalist. I worked with a PR agency for a number of years. My first client was Stonehenge. Interesting, didn't answer back, but a fascinating history, and we love the story around that. I then moved into advertising. I worked in the out-of-home industry and moved to be global marketing director for a business called Clear Channel, so selling posters. The writing really was on the wall for me with the advent of digital. So I then moved and set up a mobile marketing agency and realized the thing I really loved was facilitating training programs and education. So Burn the Sky, set up now 10 years ago, is a digital consultancy and executive education business.
Brilliant. Could you just tell us a bit more about Burn the Sky and the sort of training that you provide your clients with?
Yes. So what we realized early on is that while a lot of time was spent and money was being spent on other channels, there was a massive disconnect with time spent on mobile and money spent on mobile. So the executive education that we identified early was a need, not so much just to tell people what mobile is. I mean, everyone's using mobile to do all sorts of things. But from the business's point of view, how should they invest in mobile and develop a presence which is easy for both the end user to engage, whether it's building awareness, getting an understanding of the business, making a purchase or converting, or indeed becoming a loyal customer. And then from the business point of view, do we use a site or an app? Are we using the same approach for search and advertising as we do on desktop? How do we use location? What are the privacy implications? So we want to simplify as much as possible the opportunity, take a customer spec perspective rather than a business perspective, but build learning programs which are very much based on a modular approach, which meet the needs of the customer, but present it in a way that everyone across the business understands the principles and critically how to apply them to the business. So it's very much a blended learning process we offer that matches the learning needs of the client to the technologies and processes that they can engage with.
Fantastic. So you may remember I joined you recently for a training course on brand activation with the Digital Greenhouse here in Guernsey. And we explored the See, Think, Do, Care model. Can you just give us a quick rundown of what that is for those who may not have heard of it before?
Yeah, sure. So I think this is a very important principle that revisits and challenges the traditional way that a lot of marketers think. In the old days, we had this principle about the marketing funnel. And the theory went that if you want to engage with a customer, first you need to build awareness. So they come into the top of the journey and then you give them information. Then there's a consideration phase and then they convert and they become loyal customers. And if they like what they get, then they repurchase and maybe they tell other people. Of course, digital changes all of this because the journey is more complex than ever. It's not linear, and the influences that people have that they get from people they know, influencers, they get from their families and friends, they get from the social media they see, means that they may not naturally go from one stage, awareness, consideration, purchase. They may indeed go backwards. They see a negative review, they hear a negative comment, they go back and spend more time in consideration. So the see, think, do, care model is all about, as the name suggests, looking at it through the customer's eyes. What do they see in the awareness phase? What are they thinking about in the next consideration phase? What are they doing digitally and where are they going? And then what do they care about and how does the brand care about them? So very customer centric, and it's non-linear and it is a little bit complex. But if we understand this framework, it's a very good planning tool which allows us then to identify for the different customers what is the information that the brand needs to present at different stages in the journey? What sorts of content are going to be most powerful and the tone of voice across the journey? And then how are we going to measure engagement and conversion and impact? So that's the model for you.
And do you think that the model today that you're using, the See, Think, Do, Care model, do you think that that's more applicable to digital marketing compared to more traditional ways of print media and that sort of thing?
I think it is. It's a great question, that. The way that digital works and the kind of magic, the secret sauce of digital is the real-time interaction and the data that we can extract based on people's behavior. Now, what is it that they're searching? What is it that they're watching on YouTube? What landing pages are they on? What are they buying? And then critically in social media, what are they liking? What are they sharing? The fact that we can capture all this information in real time provides signals about what people really want and allows us dynamically to serve up more of the content that's really working at the right place, at the right time, on the right device, on the right tone of voice, and not to spend money on a thing that doesn't work so well. You know, back to your question about print, traditional media. I used to work in the out-of-home industry. If you did your research and you put those posters out there on the walls, in the airports, on the bus shelters, and then you realize actually something's not quite right, the message is wrong, something blows up in the news, suddenly you've got to get a guy out there to rip all those posters down overnight. Well, in digital, guess what? We can do that in real time. And so there's a real opportunity to optimize what we do. And that makes the See, Think, Do, Care model very much fit for the digital age.
Yeah. Do you think it's easier now then to target people because of digital marketing?
Oh, without question.
Yeah.
And the question is not so much, is it easier? Yes, it's much easier. But the question is, to what degree should we be using the tools available as marketers in order to target people and retarget them across the journey? Now, you've got to be careful here, because in the real world, you may say, well, it's rather worrying if you know that people are following you using location-based information. This can freak people out. And we don't like being chased around the internet. The fact that we've liked something or we browsed something or bought something, suddenly we're bombarded with ads. It's actually not a good thing to be on the end of. So we've got to make sure that we're GDPR compliant. We're looking at the privacy issues. We make sure we've got people opting in to all service and marketing based messaging, rather than just saying, oh, we've got their email address, we can use these dynamic retargeting tools, sort of bosh, off you have it, because you can really start to annoy people there. But if you get it right, you can be very clever. One of my early clients in the digital space with Specsavers, a business you know well from where you are, and we developed a really effective service for them, which was allowing people in store, the managers in store, to send messaging reminders to people about their appointment. So if you had an appointment the next day, you get a message, don't forget your appointment tomorrow. What we found was the no-show rates halved, and they saved £4 million in the first year. Now, it's not going to win any design awards, but boy, that's very clever, and it's providing a service that's good for the customer and very good for the business. And that's where we need to get to.
That's amazing. You've sort of led me on to my next question. You've touched on it a little bit, but it was obviously the framework is mostly based on utilizing customer data. So can you just tell us why this is so important for organizations to use and what the benefits are to harnessing it and how you can harness it ethically?
Yeah, so I think data is data. Everyone's talking about big data. It's the age of data. Data's the new oil, blah, blah, blah. But the reality is that there is a vast amount of data available. And if we know what we're looking for and we can capture this data, by processing it effectively, we can unlock really valuable insights into our customers' needs. Now, this is where a lot of traditional marketers rather miss the point. It's important on our CRM databases that we know who someone is, we know their date of birth, we know their preferences, where they live, all of this stuff. That's who they are. But the really important data is what they want. It's their needs, what we call at Google their micro moments. Mm. If we can define those needs and we can link those back to particular cycles in the purchase journey, particular cycles in their day, their week, their month, their life, and we can start to build out very personalized experiences, that's where the real value comes. And so what we need as businesses is not just to have a bunch of smart data scientists who sit in the corner and churn out reports, but we need people who are good at storytelling, who can look at the data and decipher and interpret the data to tell us what the really important signals are from this data and how we can be identifying and anticipating customer needs in a way which isn't creepy and sort of chasing people around the place, but is very natural and is very sort of conversational in its tone. And that's where the use of the data and unlocking the value of data is really important and gives you great competitive advantage if you get it right.
Absolutely. Actually, you made a nice connection there when talking about having your sort of digital analysts versus, you know, people who are actually implementing this stuff as well. So obviously there is a time where PR practitioners and digital agencies can meet in the middle to make a lovely harmony of this. From your previous experience in PR, can you tell us how PR practitioners can utilize models such as the See, Think, Do, Care to help their clients?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I believe from the very early stage in my career that PR was more valuable than advertising. If you can influence an influencer, in the old days, get a journalist to write something or find someone with a big following these days to get your message out, that's far more credible and authentic than a paid message. Any Muppet can buy some space or airtime, stick a message out there. You want people with influence to get the message out authentically. Now, the big advantage for PR agencies now is you're experts in crafting messaging and getting messaging out there in a way which it has to be authentic or it's just press release, chuck it in the bin. So you're in a great place now. You're also in a place where you understand what's often seen as the messy middle. This is a principle Google has invented to explain how the middle of the funnel is misunderstood and there are no effective metrics there. So within the business, you get people who understand about awareness and awareness metrics. And then you get the e-commerce people who understand about conversion metrics. But there's a huge disconnect. Now, what the PR agencies have is an understanding of the customer and the messaging in the middle, in that think or that consideration phase. And if you can bring in messaging and be measuring which messages land particularly well and how you influence consumer behavior at that stage in the journey, I don't see any agencies doing this effectively at the moment. This is a massive opportunity for PR agencies to step up and take some ownership of that part of the journey. And of course, when you consider the massive opportunity social media presents and how PR in its essence is telling a credible brand story, again, the PR company should naturally put their arms around that. So yeah. The bits which are misunderstood, the think phase and the care phase of the journey, this feels the domain of PR agencies where you can fit in. And guess what? With the importance of the cookie legislation now and what Apple is doing, which is preventing people using third-party cookie data, it means that the voice of the customer and understanding the value of your primary data and how to connect and engage with the customer directly, that's even more playing into the hands of PR companies, I would argue.
That's super, super interesting. I'm going to steer a little bit away from the See, Think, Do, Care model now and talk about some of the books you've written. So obviously they focus primarily on mobile marketing. Can you just talk to us about how the landscape has changed for digital marketing over the past 10 or so years?
Yeah, I mean, I think at the beginning, it was a case of understanding what you needed to do. And there was something of a land grab back then, at the sort of 10 years ago. You got businesses that wanted to have an app because they felt that they should have an app. And there were crazy examples of money spent. I'll give you one example. It still sort of makes me laugh. It makes me cringe with embarrassment too. British Telecom launched an app to help people find their nearest phone box. Now, that really is as stupid as it sounds. I'm on my phone. Why do I want to find an era's phone box? It's crazy. Oh, but there were many businesses that were just throwing money away and they felt they needed to be seen to do something without really understanding what the customer wanted in all this. And also filling in a gap, because back in the old days when people were running around with BlackBerries, the internet wasn't a thing on a small device. And therefore the apps stepped in to fill that vacuum. Now we realize that actually a website configured for a mobile phone can do pretty much everything that an app can do at a fraction of the cost. Now we understand also that if we can look at some basic insights, you know, people don't share their phones. If I asked you to give your phone to me, you would just say, no way, it's my phone, it's my problem. People feel very uncomfortable. So an understanding now that actually it's a very private device, you need permission to be on there, and we need to be very careful with presenting information to people on phones. Now brands realize, actually, we need to treat this mobile thing with a lot more respect and understand some of the massive opportunities in personalization in a very intimate way, and how we can get on people's phones and they can themselves become hugely valuable ambassadors. Now we understand that area, I think that points to a future where we'll be looking much more at building assistance for the end customer, providing very intuitive customer service and concierge type services between the customer service team and the customer. And if we're looking to launch new products, harnessing this vast amount of data out there, we're able to do so in a much more targeted but subtle way, using the PR skills we've talked about to make sure we're not seen as selling, but actually we are serving. And I think that's the big opportunity in the future. And it raises a very important point, an opportunity, I would say, which is how do we harness machine learning and automation to replace a lot of the manual repetitive things with automated processes, but make it feel like it's a very human interface?
Absolutely. You know, AI is something that we've been talking about a lot here as well. It is the future. It's here. It's happening. But finding that link between a human message that is carefully crafted and carefully worded combined with AI it's tricky. It's really difficult. And it's so interesting to see it developing as it is and at the rate it is. Obviously, and, you know, AI will be that's going to be the next thing, isn't it? Is that something you can develop on a bit more of how that will work, what that will look like?
Yes, it is. I mean, it is the next thing. But as with so many technologies, if you put it in the wrong hands, it can be very dangerous. And it would be putting a Ferrari in the hands of a 14-year-old who's just managed to nick the keys and take it out. I mean, you're going to wrap the Ferrari around the lamppost. So we've got to make sure that the power of this technology is dealt with in a responsible way, and that it's not seen as the solution. And I always come back to the same point. You know, my dad was an engineer. My dad, he designed the Concorde simulator. He's a very, very clever design technology guy. And what he always said to me was, look, whatever you do, whether you're doing executive education, which is what I'm doing at the moment, or you're involved in writing books about this stuff, the trick is to simplify. And I always come back to this point. We must simplify what we're doing. It's the education programs we deliver. It's the use of technology. Just imagine, this is an iPhone. There are so many patents and so many technologies that sit behind the scenes and allow this thing to behave in such an intuitive manner. I don't need a manual to figure out how the iPhone thing works. I'll just talk to people, or I'll figure it out for myself. Now, the brilliance of Apple is that they've made some very complex technology literally invisible. It just enables things to happen. And I think we need to be conscious with AI that it's very, very powerful, but let's just be very clever about how we use the AI to solve problems which can be done that will make people's lives more effective and more efficient in automating a lot of processes. Also automated things like bidding for keywords, bidding for and selecting the right creative treatment by looking at what worked well, what generated the maximum number of clicks, what turned into valuable conversion and increases in lifetime value. That's the clever bit of AI, but let's not replace human beings with robots in a very clunky way, because we're just going to become the laughing stock of our competitors, and we're going to become much disliked by our customers. And of course, the customer is the most important person in any organization, as we all know. One click, you're deleted. One negative review, your chief exec and everyone under has been damaged by the voice of customer, which ultimately we must respect and improve.
Definitely. I think people can be a bit fearful of AI as well, obviously with the whole ethical implications behind it, but that could be a whole other podcast in itself. So maybe we can revisit that near the end of the year.
Yes, I'd love to. I mean, I think there's a, you know, I'd be making a great mistake if I said I knew all the answers. No one knows all the answers. I've got a perspective, but you're absolutely right, Krista. I mean, there are a lot of developments in terms of the research, in terms of the applications. There are some very clever technologies around, you know, using TensorFlow, using BigQuery analytics. And of course, as businesses now focus more on porting their data with cloud-based solutions, we get access to processing data at far superior speeds. We're able to deploy much smarter tools in order to manage and manipulate this data, which unlocks the true potential. I'd love to talk to you about other AI examples.
We could go on and on.
We've got time. but that I think is you're right. We should tread with caution. And just because you can, it doesn't mean we should. We need to be very cautious and always listen to the customer and understand what they want and serve their best needs.
Absolutely. So my last question, just to kind of sum everything up a little bit, could you give us three top tips that you would give to startup companies to make sure that they are making the most of their digital marketing?
Yes, that's a great question. I think three top tips. The first one is, no matter how energized and excited and well-funded you are, make sure that you start with an outside-in approach. Always listen to the customer. You know, in the words of Jeff Bezos, be obsessed by the customer and serve the customer's needs in all aspects. As Google says, if you get it right with the customer, everything else falls into play. If the customer doesn't have a good experience, you've got nothing left. So customer first would be my first one. My second one would be, develop a day one mentality and don't let it go. As any business grows, what we'll tend to find is there are more people to manage, there are more processes, there are things that kind of get in a way. And we need to maintain that day one mentality. No matter how big the business gets, always remember the founding principle of the business. What is its driving purpose? I think of Simon Sinek. I think of the power of why you exist. What is your emotional connection and driver as a founder? Stay true to that. Make sure people in the business understand that and make sure your customers follow that. So that's the second one. And the third one is don't be afraid to make mistakes. It's essential in any organization that wants to be truly pioneering that they're not fearful of failure. It's not a case of fail and be reprimanded. It's a case of fail and learn. It's fail fast, learn fast. And remember that no matter what your VCs are saying to you, the real ROI of innovation and smart digital thinking is not the short-term money. It's the learnings and how you can share those learnings with other people around the business without fear of making mistakes.
That's great. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us. That's all we've got time for today, but thank you so much for joining me, Rob. It's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the comms chat.
Yeah, no, it's been a great pleasure. Thanks for your time, Krista, and the very best of luck with your podcast series. And it would be great to reconnect at some point.
Absolutely. We'll talk more about AI soon, I'm sure.
I do hope so. All right. Well, all the best of luck and we'll keep in contact.
Lovely. Thanks so much, Rob.
Thank you for listening to the comms chat. Make sure to find us on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Give us a follow so that you never miss another episode.